Irv already made reference to what I'm going to talk about. He gave you several illustrations of where sports people have made really bad gaffes, like scoring on yourself. In fact, that my topic this morning is stumbling along the way. And I'm sure we'll all be able to identify with this topic, and I'll refer to various references as we go along. But let me introduce what I plan to say today. It was a state dinner in Tokyo. The political and the economic shoguns of Japan were all there, sitting around the table. It was beautifully decorated. American business moguls were all there as well, and hoping that their leader would make a very positive impression upon the Japanese hosts. But the trouble was, he'd been feeling a little funny all morning. A little lightheaded and a bit of a fever and somewhat shaky. But this was one of those times where your personal comfort just didn't matter, because you had to make an impression on those who were there. Because this dinner carried huge implications for American business. In fact, the world economy, and so he had to be in top form. Well, he had just worked his way through the second course, raw caviar, not my favorite, and was now starting dubiously into the third course, which was grilled beef with pepper sauce. That's not my style either. Well, he turned to his left and he nodded to his host, Prime Minister Kishi Miyazawa, and then he threw up in the Prime Minister's lap. And then he tumbled to the floor. And his alarmed wife and the security agents and people like Jamie showed up to see if they could assist him. And all he said was, "Look, just leave me alone. Roll me under the table until the dinner's finished." So lying there on that fine oriental carpet, President George Bush may have been thinking about the videotape that would create. And certainly they would. They'd visualize the whole thing. You can just see it in slow motion and living color. They'd play it again and again, just like the media does today. And then a little later, the press secretary at the time, Marlon Fitzwater, stood before the media of the Western world, and he was obliged to say what must have been obvious to everyone. "The president," he intoned, "is a human being. The president gets the flu like everybody else." So if Fitzwater had been wise, he might have quoted from James chapter 2 and verse 3, where it says, "We all stumble in many ways. Indeed, we all make mistakes," the New Living Bible says. "But sometimes our best just isn't good enough. We admire perfection, we love success, we despise failure. Only students with honors and honors with distinction and great distinction ever get the names on a board in the school. We get annoyed by people who aren't successful. We get unhappy when they stumble. Perhaps we need a reminder this morning that we all stumble in many ways, and we write each other off far too easily. We get sick when we want to look strong. We babble when we want to say something profound, and we reach for the shining star of personal achievement only to fall flat on our faces." Well, consider Miss Mott. She's meeting her boyfriend's parents for the first time. They had gone to an elegant restaurant, and everything was a little stiff, as you might have imagined. And then the events took an unfortunate turn. "I did everything you taught me, Mom," she said. "I coordinated my clothing the night before. I brushed my teeth. I arrived promptly. I kept my elbows off the table. I did everything I was supposed to do." And then when they brought the tab with a lemon twist arrived, she said, "I raised my glass to my lips, ramming the plastic straw up my nostril. Blood squirted from it and dripped onto my white silk blouse that I was wearing. that had been given for her birthday. "I just wanted to die," she cried. "I didn't know what to do. First, cry or call you or pull out the straw which was still stuck in her nose, pointing at her host." Why is it that our most horrific gaffes always come when we want to make the most favorable impression? Like the time at a private grad party when in Winnipeg when I was graduating from Bible college. We had a great time, and my girlfriend, Katie, at the time, had come from my grad, and we were looking forward to a great evening party. But then it was time to eat. And the whole hostess had made some beautiful open-faced sandwiches with a slice of tomato placed on the top. I should explain, my wife had bought herself a beautiful new outfit for the occasion, a two-piece white outfit. And I thought she looked a darling in it. And of course, we were both trying to be perfect to create an impression on ourselves and our friends. And well, guess what happened? That open-faced sandwich fell off my plate and directly onto her lap. And the tomato hit the outfit first. Well, she said, "It's no big deal. I'm sure I can wash it off." But she couldn't. Now, she had to wear it because she didn't have anything else, and she still hasn't worn it. Of course, this is 50 years later, and it wouldn't fit her anymore. But I bought her many, many outfits that she could wear since, so I feel like I've made up for it. In fact, I'll pay for her dinner if that helps for the comment I just made. So, in our humbleness, we stumble. Sometimes the stumbling is of little consequence, and then again it can be of huge importance. But some, of course, never stumble. Just ask them. It's the others who always do the stumbling. If we could only be as perfect as they are, well, the world would be a great place. Well, if you come across Mr. or Mrs. Perfect in the classroom, you can guarantee the students will dedicate themselves to finding some flaw in your personality. You know, parents, they see themselves as perfect. 94% was nice on the test, but 95% would have been better. Now, music teachers, well, they're the worst. Perhaps the food your partner makes isn't quite like Mom used to make it. It was a great speech, but there was a piece of dandruff on your collar. So Apostle Paul reminds us that although we think we are perfect, we are far from it. We all stumble. I do, and I know you do. And that it isn't always cute and funny. We can hurt ourselves in those humiliating experiences, but still worse, we can hurt others. It's embarrassing, it's humbling, and it's as frustrating as can be. So the purpose of the sermon this morning is to remind ourselves that it is okay to stumble. We need to learn to be more gracious and more forgiving of each other rather than running to another church the minute the pastor or some member does something we don't like. The scripture reveals three reasons for our stumbling, and I'd like to deal with those this morning. In the first place, we stumble because we have limited bodies. In Psalm 103, verses 13 to 16, we read these words. "The Lord is like a father to his children, tender and compassionate to those who fear him. For he knows how weak we are. He remembers we are only dust. Our days on earth are like grass, like wildflowers. We bloom and die. The wind blows and we are gone as though we had never been there." He remembers, but we forget. Sometimes we think we're made of titanium steel, and we think that others should be too, but just isn't so. The label on humankind lists only one ingredient, dust. There's only so much strength in these arms. There's only so many miles in these legs, and there's only so many tears in these eyes, and there's only so much remembering in that brain. I can't do everything I want to do. I can't even do everything I should do. I can't live up to all those expectations I have for myself, and I could never live up to your expectations of me either. We need to remember, as Paul says, we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the surprising greatness of the power of God be of God and not from ourselves. We need to remember something. We are part of a fallen human race. Perfection here will always be an impossibility. If you're looking for perfection here, you'll never find it. Look again at what Paul said. We have this treasure in jars of clay. Paul says, you guys need to remember something. I'm not the treasure. I'm just the pot that contains the treasure. We need to get a hold of that for ourselves, and we need to get a hold of that for others. I'm just the box that contains the shoes. I'm just the case that contains the diamond. I'm just the barn that controls the racehorse. Behind those gnarled and arthritic hands hides a magnificent treasure. Psalmist says, I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Try telling that to a junior high school student. Girls especially preen themselves all day long because they think they look ugly. And what about me? And I'm not bragging when I say this, but I am too fearfully and wonderfully made. The problem is that I have contracted furniture's disease, and my chest has now slipped down into my drawers. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. I have 180 pounds of beautifully crafted dust. And that's all. A young boy had been to Sunday school. And the Sunday school teacher said to his class that day that the human bodies are made of dust. Well, that night the boy couldn't sleep. So he called his mother in and said, Mother, is it true that our bodies are made from dust? And she said, yeah, that's true. She said, why? Well, they told us that in Sunday school. And the reason I'm afraid is that there's somebody under my bed. And I can't tell whether he's coming or going. And that's the case with most of us most of the time. We can't tell either whether we're coming or going. It's because we're made of dust. We're frail. Scripture says God remembers that we are but dust. God takes into account our human condition. It's a fact that he keeps in mind the whole journey of our life. Perhaps sometimes we take life a little too seriously. Whether we admit it or not, we sometimes think God marks us on performance. Well, maybe Tony Campolo was right when he makes that point in his book, Life is a Party. We need to laugh a little more, perhaps, when we realize that we are dust. It's something you would expect me to say, of course. The last day, a student came to me and said, do you have another joke for me before we part for the summer? And I said, well, why don't you look in the mirror? There's lots of opportunity for humor there. Some of us just can't enjoy life because we can't stand the imperfections around us. Why do we expect our employees to always work perfectly? Why do we expect the husband to always be the knight in shining armor? Why do we expect our children to be better than we were? And why do we expect our pastors to always to perform perfectly? You need to remember something about me, and I need to remember that about you. Please be patient with me. God is not finished with me yet. We used to sing that little song when we were kids on the playground. I'm the king of the castle, and you're the dirty rascal. And the truth of the matter is, we're all dirty rascals. So we stumble. Even youth stumbles. We stumble because we have limited bodies. Remember next time you make a blunder. And remember that when you come home to church today and you discover that your wife didn't turn the oven on so dinner would be ready when you got there. Secondly, we stumble because we have a limited wisdom. There's lots of knowledge around, isn't there? And it doubles probably every year by now. It used to be every 10 years. In fact, we know so much now that it takes 5 years to train a teacher to to become a teacher. Well, that's not the case. It takes 5 years because you got to keep the professors employed for 5 years. It takes 9 years to become a psychiatrist. Well, no doubt we've learned a lot. But those adventures into space, they always capture my attention. And when that probe went past Pluto the other day and took those pictures, I was amazed. I really was. Not thinking that we're ever going to move our human race over there and start over somewhere else. I'm not that foolish about that. I guess I'll never forget the first time man landed on the moon, 1969. I stayed up all night. I sat glued to the television set and watched as they took their steps, as they spoke their words. But what I didn't know, and what the world didn't know, I've been told that since, that when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin walked back into the lunar excursion module, Buzz Aldrin broke the ignition switch off with his big bulky suit. Now what? But so they created the same thing here on Earth in another lunar excursion module, and they didn't have any tools with them to fix things, and so the only thing that produced the arc that made the electricity work was a ballpoint pen. That's all they had. It was a ballpoint pen that got the two astronauts back to Earth the first time. Yes, we've learned a lot. I'm amazed at how much we have learned. There's lots of knowledge around, but what is knowledge? Unfortunately, it's what we at the moment believe to be true, because it keeps changing. Sometimes knowledge is what we prefer to believe is true. And any time I go to a dinosaur park in Drumheller, I see an illustration of how this is. Remember, if you, those of you who've been there have seen that big mural, and that fish swims a little too close to the shore, and it grows legs, and it walks out of there. Always amazed when I see that. I'm supposed to believe that. When I was 14, I was impressed with how wise I was. I should have become the prime minister when I was 14. I had all the answers, and 14-year-olds still have all the answers. But by the time I was 18, I was amazed how much my father had learned. In fact, today, he's long gone, but I'm still overwhelmed by how wise and knowledgeable he actually was. So there's a lot of knowledge around, but not a lot of wisdom. What is wisdom? It's knowledge we currently, correctly apply. That's wisdom. So knowledge that doesn't lead to wide actions is really quite useless. So how wise are we? Let's not worry about the scientist or the university professor for a minute. Let's talk about the average guy in the church. How wise is your pastor? How wise are your parents? How wise are your children? How wise is your church board? Sometimes we wonder, don't we, how we can make such foolish decisions. Although we may think we know it all, Paul says we know in part. So our knowledge will always be limited. Paul says we know in part. When he said that, he was being nice. Because sometimes you really don't know very much. When we find three pieces to fit into a crossword puzzle, we think we have the world by the tail. Sometimes we read dreadful stories in our daily papers. My heart goes out to that young father in Portland, Oregon, who some time ago was playing with his one-year-old son in the family backyard. And the heat that day had been severe, much like it's been around here for a while. So he decided to gently spray his toddler with the garden hose. Never occurred to him that the water in that hose would be terribly hot. In fact, scalding hot. He was hospitalized with burns over 75% of his body. And his young dad sat in the hospital room looking at the stairs and stars of the hospital workers and wondering how in the world had he become so separated from his brain. It's a wonder children ever survive their parents, actually. I remember reading of a father to who wanted to treat his son's diaper rash with rubbing alcohol. He reasoned, it's clean, it's cool, it's sanitary. It's also about the most cruel and painful thing he could have inflicted on his little son. He knew right then and there what a terrible mistake he had made. He felt like a terminal idiot. It wasn't sinful, it wasn't malicious, just plain old-fashioned stupidity. A student in Bible school had come to a teacher with a piece of writing, and he had spent a lot of time creating this thing, and he was proud of it. And he said to his professor, well, scribble all over it in red ink, tear it to pieces if you want. What he really meant is, I really respect you and I long for your affirmation. And I've poured myself into this document and my self-esteem is at stake. A lot of other things had gone wrong in his life. And when the teacher gave back his essay, he had scribbled all over it just like the student had asked him to. He realized he had made a terrible mistake. The boy never wrote another paper in his life. We hurt people by what we do. We hurt people by what we say. We all suffer from limited wisdom. We wonder about each other, how could we be so foolish? We wonder about our politicians. We wonder about our students. In the middle of puberty, they date somebody that's surely headed for prison. No wonder about our church leaders. How could you make such a decision? As I look back over my life, I've stood on the idiot box many times. How could I have been so unwise? What a bundle of missed opportunities I missed. But I'll do things like that, and I'll continue to do things like that, and so will you. We hurt people by the things we say and by the things we don't say. We wound our loved ones. We hurt them by what we say and by what we don't say. So we have limited wisdom. We do well to remember that about each other. In Hosea chapter 4, verse 6, the prophet says, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." And Scripture repeats that again and again. And finally, we stumble because we have limited faith. In Matthew chapter 17, 14 to 20, we read these words. At the foot of the mountain, a large crowd was waiting for them. A man came and knelt before Jesus and said, "Lord, have mercy on my son. He has seizures and suffers terribly. He often falls into the fire and into the water, so I brought him to your disciples, but they couldn't heal him." Jesus said, "You faithless and corrupt people, how long must I be with you? How long must I put up with you? Bring the boy here." Then Jesus rebuked the demon in the boy, and it left him. From that moment, the boy was well. Afterwards, the disciples asked Jesus privately, "Why couldn't we cast out that demon?" "You don't have enough faith," Jesus told them. "I tell you the truth, if you had faith even as small as a mustard seed, you could say to this mountain, 'Move from here to over there,' and it would move. Nothing would be impossible." Faith to move mountains? You can have anything and do anything and will anything if you have enough faith? No, I don't think that's what that means. I don't think my faith can ever alter the sovereignty or the will of God. If it's God's will, and really only God ever knows that, to take someone home at 20 or 40 or 60 or 80, no amount of faith to the contrary is going to change that. I read a book some time ago. It was called When Your Mountains Won't Move by Craig Salmis. In that book, he makes the point that believing God, faith is believing that God knows what's best for you. My prayers of faith are never meant to overrule God. They're meant to move me. Our problem is that we don't have too much faith. The problem is that we have too little faith. I've seen God's power, God's grace, God's sovereignty over and over again. Jesus said that he's able to do immeasurably more than we could ever ask or imagine. But I ask very little and imagine even less. And as a result, I often stumble. In this connection, I came across a passage that I never really paid much attention to before, but it's taken from 2 Kings chapter 13, 16 to 20. I'll just read it for you. When Elisha was in his last illness, King Jehoash of Israel visited him and wept over him. My father, I see the chariots and the charioteers of Israel, he cried. Elisha told him, get a bow and some arrows. The king did as he was told. Elisha told him, put your hand on the bow, and Elijah laid his hands on the king's hand. Then he commanded, open the eastern window, and he opened it. Then he said, shoot. So he shot an arrow. Elisha proclaimed, this is the Lord's arrow, an arrow of victory over Aram, for you will completely conquer the Arameans at Aphek. Then he said, now pick up the other arrows and strike them against the ground. So the king picked up and struck the ground three times. But the man of God was angry with him. You should have struck the ground five or six times, he exclaimed. Then you would have beaten Aram until it was completely destroyed. Now you will be victorious only three times. If three strikes meant three victories, and the destruction of Israel's enemies, what would have happened if he'd have struck the ground 10 times? Or 50? Or 100? What if the king had grabbed the arrows with great enthusiasm and thrust them onto the ground and injured himself in the process? What if he had responded with all his might? What would have happened to the kingdom of Jehoash? Well, we'll never know the answers. For after three timid taps, his reign faded into a dreary historical footnote. That's me. Maybe that's you. Maybe the Lord gives you an unparalleled opportunity to touch lives and reflect his beauty, to do battle with the enemy of his kingdom. But gives you a set of divine arrows to use, and instead of thundering into the ground, we make little patterns in the sand instead. My faith is so often too small, and so I stumble. So let me conclude. These reminders could be discouraging, but every time the Bible gives us a peek at our human limitations, it immediately gives us the sufficiency of Christ to bolster us. David said it, if the Lord delights in a man's ways, he makes his steps firm. Though he stumble, he will not fall, for the Lord upholds him with his hand. Asaph, the psalmist, cried, my flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. And Paul said, therefore I will boast all the more gladly about my weakness, so that Christ's power may rest upon me. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Supposing a 10-year-old son, I took a 10-year-old son on a bike ride around southern Alberta, and I have a sleek Japanese bike, and he has one of those department store specials that he had saved money up for months and finally bought it. His bike wasn't much, but it's all he could afford. And he'd been waiting for this trip for a very long time, totally excited that he can finally spend some time with his father. He could only go slow with his bike. I wanted to fly down those old country roads, but the shifter on his bike wouldn't cooperate. Every time he tried to downshift or upshift, he slowed to a crawl, and his derailleur would sound like a Tommy gun. I got impatient with him. I berated him for his slowness. I said he could do a lot better if he tried a little harder. He was trying his best, but his bike simply wouldn't work. Eventually, we stopped for a rest, and that's when I noticed that he kept his head down and tears were rolling down his cheek. At that point, I feel like a wretch. I embrace him and tell him I'm sorry for my foolish impatience. Now, if I can be moved by my child's limitations, how does my Heavenly Father feel when I can't keep up and my gears get jammed and my legs get tired? What does he think when my dreams fall short and I push myself to the limits, but I give up in sorrow and frustration? Does he stay on his bike and say, "Well, too bad, kid. Your legs are too short to bike with me"? No, he climbs off, puts his arms around me and says, "I'll never leave you behind, son. It doesn't really matter how far we go, but just being together with you on this ride is really all that matters." So we all stumble in many ways. We waste our opportunities. We miss our cues. We ram straws up our nostrils. We reach higher than we can ever grasp. We may even throw up in the Prime Minister's lap. Ultimately, we fail because we are fallible. God knows all about it, and he loves us through it all. He has a long track record of dealing with stumbling, fumbling, weak servants like you and me. I believe we need to remind that as a Christian community or the church, that the church is not a museum. It's a hospital for sinners. None of us are perfect. We all stumble. And we need to allow for failures. They'll happen. They'll happen because of our limited knowledge. They'll happen because of our limited wisdom. And they'll happen because of our limited faith. We need to learn as Christians not to shoot our own wounded. Someone said, "The church is the only army that shoots its own wounded." In one of the famous lessons on forgiveness, Jesus gave us the recipe. 70 times 7. We need to learn to be a forgiving people. That chorus we used to sing says it so well. They'll know us by our love. The church is and has always been a hospital, a place where one cripple helps another cripple along the way. At the Victory Church in Lethbridge, on one of the walls is this sign: "No perfect people allowed here." It's a wonderful statement when you think about that. On the one hand, it's not true, because in Jesus Christ we're all perfect. But in our daily lives, we know that we are anything but perfect. So let's remember the famous words from that bumper sticker: "Please be patient with me. God isn't finished with me yet." God bless you.